Who Killed Robert Wan? A story in two parts. This is part one, The Townhouse. In our nation's capital, shadows hold all of the secrets, and shadows are fleeting. We dance round in a ring and suppose, but the secret sits in the middle and knows. Thirty-two-year-old Robert Wan was a proud fourth-generation Chinese-American. He had been born in Manhattan and raised in Brooklyn. He was the eldest of two sons born to his parents, William and Amy. Robert graduated as class valedictorian from Xaverian High School, and he went on to attend the College of William and Mary as a James Monroe Scholar. The College of William and Mary is nestled in the historic town of Williamsburg and stands as a revered institution of higher learning. At its heart, the college fosters a community of bright minds and inquisitive spirits. Among its esteemed scholars, the James Monroe Scholarship Program shines as a beacon of academic excellence and leadership. Named after the distinguished alumnus and former U.S. President, James Monroe Scholars embody the ideals and intellectual curiosity, civic engagement, and commitment to making a positive impact on society. These scholars embrace a rigorous academic journey, driven by a thirst for knowledge and a passion for service, while fostering an inclusive and collaborative environment that shapes future leaders and changemakers. It was 1992 when Robert Wan and Joseph Price first crossed paths during their college years while they both attended the College of William and Mary. As students at this prestigious institution, they shared the experience of navigating the challenges and opportunities that higher education brings. Together, the two men revamped a secret society on campus called the 13 Club, whose purpose was to perform covert acts of kindness. Whether they were classmates, acquaintances, or part of the same social circles, their paths converged within the vibrant academic community that thrives at the College of William and Mary. It is within these formative years that their lifelong connection was forged, laying the groundwork for their future interactions and the events that would later unfold. Robert graduated from William and Mary in 1996. And then he attended the University of Pennsylvania Law School, where he earned his Juris Doctoral degree with honors in 1999. Robert Wan was no slouch, and he was determined to make something special out of his time here on Earth. Robert landed a job with the prestigious law firm of Covington and Burling and became a rising star within the Asian American legal community. It was during a legal conference held in January 2002 that Robert met Catherine Yu, the woman Robert would eventually marry. Catherine went by Kathy, and she was the daughter of Korean immigrants. Kathy grew up in the Windy City of Chicago. Just as Robert was academically successful, Kathy also held many academic accomplishments of her own, and she had a very promising career as an attorney. After this conference, Robert and Kathy began dating seriously, and within a year, Robert proposed. Kathy made the decision to move her life to Washington, D.C., where the couple wed in 2003. They were very excited about the prospects of their lives together and the trajectory of their blossoming careers. Robert Wan was known for his unwavering commitment to his community and his dedication to acts of service. Throughout his life, he consistently sought out opportunities to make a positive impact on those around him. Whether it was volunteering his time for charitable causes, lending a helping hand to those in need, or actively participating in community initiatives, Robert exemplified the true spirit of the word service. His selflessness and genuine care for others resonated deeply with those who had the privilege of knowing him. During the early summer of 2006, Robert began wanting for something more in his life. His job at the Covington & Burling law firm in Washington, D.C. was going well. However, his desire to be of service to his community was a yearning Robert could not brush to the side. Because of this, Robert spoke to his wife, Kathy, about his desire to apply for an open position as general counsel for Radio Free Asia. Radio Free Asia has played a vital role in promoting the principles of press freedom and providing uncensored news and information to millions across Asia. As a nonprofit international broadcasting organization, RFA serves as a beacon of independent journalism, covering a wide range of topics, including human rights abuses, political developments, social issues, and cultural events. With a dedicated team of journalists and correspondents, Radio Free Asia breaks through barriers, providing a platform for voices often marginalized or silenced. Its commitment to objective reporting and its relentless pursuit of the truth have made it a trusted source of news for people living under repressive regimes or in areas where information is tightly controlled. Through its broadcasts, Radio Free Asia empowers individuals with knowledge, fosters dialogue, and champions the importance of a free and informed society. This was a perfect place for Robert to work and make a name for himself, all while helping his community. Despite the disparity in salaries between his prestigious position at the Washington law firm and the job offer from Radio Free Asia, Robert Wan and his wife, Kathy, made a deliberate choice. While Kathy earned a substantial income working at a healthcare consulting firm, they opted for a career path that might bring in less money, but promised an abundance of joy and fulfillment. Their decision was rooted in prioritizing happiness and finding purpose beyond monetary reward. As they believed that true wealth lies in pursuing a path that resonates with their passions and values. After successfully navigating the interview process, Robert secured the job at Radio Free Asia, and by early August, he was immersing himself into his new role. Eager to expand his network and deepen his engagement, Robert made arrangements to stay overnight in Washington, D.C. on August 2nd. A nighttime legal seminar beckoned him, and he planned to seize this opportunity to connect with the second shift staff at Radio Free Asia. Together, Robert and Kathy weighed the options, and the couple concluded that staying overnight in the city would be more convenient than enduring the long journey back to their condo in Oakton, Virginia, via public transportation. Serendipitously, Joseph Price, Robert's cherished friend from their college days and someone Kathy was well acquainted with, resided in a prime location near DuPont Circle, making it an ideal place to rest and reconnect. As twilight descends upon Washington, D.C., the neighborhood of DuPont Circle transforms into a hauntingly enchanting realm, caught between the realms of reality and dreams. Here the air hangs heavy with the whispers of forgotten tales, carried by the breeze that rustles through the towering trees. Shadows dance across the cobblestone paths, casting ethereal patterns of melancholy and mystery. Gaslit lamps flicker and twist with a ghostly glow, casting a soft, otherworldly illumination upon the hidden corners and ivy-clad facades. In this timeless place, the echoes of history reverberate through the streets, whispering secrets of bygone eras. Amidst the hushed footsteps and distant echoes of laughter, there lingers an eerie elegance, a forlorn beauty that draws you in, beckoning you to uncover the secrets concealed within the depths of DuPont Circle's enigmatic heart. DuPont Circle was where Joseph Price lived. Joe, as he's known to his friends, completed his undergraduate studies in 2003 and went on to earn a law degree at the esteemed University of Virginia. Joe Price was well known for his active involvement in the gay community, and he assumed the role of president of the Gay and Lesbian Alumni Association upon his graduation from UVA. By 2006, his career soared as he ascended to the position of partner at Arent Fox, a renowned national law firm with a prominent presence in Washington, D.C. Life unfolded favorably, and success abounded in his path. In addition to his professional achievements, Joe found fulfillment in a long-term committed relationship with Victor Zaborski, a senior marketing manager for Milk Pep, the organization behind the iconic Got Milk campaigns of the early 2000s. Together, they embraced parenthood, raising two sons with a lesbian couple and establishing themselves as respected figures within the gay community. By 2004, their bond expanded as they welcomed Dylan Ward, a Georgetown graduate, into their relationship. Dylan, known for his diverse professional pursuits, joined them as they settled into a luxurious townhome worth $1.2 million near DuPont Circle. United as a family, they embraced a polyamorous lifestyle, with Joe assuming a role akin to the patriarch of the family. In 2004, the trio hosted a memorable celebration for Robert Wan's 30th birthday, illustrating the family's close bond and friendship with both Robert and Kathy. Their connection was further emphasized by Joe and Victor's attendance at the Wans' wedding in 2003. Consequently, when Robert suggested the idea of staying at Joe's townhome on the night of August 2, 2006, Kathy wholeheartedly embraced the plan without any hesitation. The morning of August 2nd started like any other day. It was a typical Wednesday. Robert and Kathy awoke and hit the gym, which was conveniently located close to the couple's home in Oakton. After a nice morning workout, the couple boarded the DC Metro together to travel into the city for their individual days of work. As the train arrived at the station, the couple gave one another a parting kiss before heading to their offices. Kathy had no idea that this would be the last kiss she would ever share with her husband. As Kathy and Robert arrived at their respective offices, they each sent an email to the other to say they had arrived at their office safe and sound. This was a cute and endearing habit that the couple participated in daily. Following his workday, Robert opted for a quick sandwich before attending a legal seminar for continuing education. The seminar concluded around 9:30 p.m., prompting him to reach out to Kathy while en route to his office to meet with the night staff at Radio Free Asia. During their conversation, he informed her of his plan to hail a cab and make his way to Joe Price's residence before retiring for the night. Robert told Kathy to have a good night. And then Robert Wan's last words to his wife were, "I love you." Little did Kathy know that this would be the final time that she would hear her beloved husband's voice. As the night grew late, Robert arrived at Joe's residence at approximately 10:30 p.m., just as they'd planned days in advance. The atmosphere was calm, with only the distant sounds of the city echoing in the background. Unbeknownst to the unsuspecting neighbors, a series of events was about to unfold. It was during the 11 p.m. newscast that a piercing scream cut through the quiet air of the neighborhood. This scream was later identified as Victor Siborski's outcry. The time was before 11:35 p.m., and the neighborhood remained blissfully unaware of the tragedy unfolding behind closed doors. Moments later, the urgency of the situation manifested itself as Victor dialed 911 at precisely 11:49 p.m., his voice trembling with fear and confusion. It was a night consumed by terror and desperation. The clock ticked towards midnight on August 2nd, 2006, when the piercing ring of the phone shattered the uneasy silence at 1509 Swan Street.
NBC Emergency 911 Operator
1509 Swan Street Northwest, am I correct?
Victor Siborski, his voice filled with panic and warm tears streaming down his face, frantically pleaded for help as he spoke to the 911 dispatcher.
Someone needs an ambulance.
In a breathless rush, he revealed the horrifying truth.
We have someone that was in our house, evidently.
An intruder had infiltrated their home
and, they stabbed somebody.
And ruthlessly attacked their dear friend, who had been staying the night. Amidst the chaos, the dispatcher's voice resonated with urgency. She probed for crucial details.
Are they bleeding?
Seeking to grasp the severity of the situation.
Female or male? Is he conscious?
The image of a wounded man bleeding profusely painted a grim picture.
Okay, where's they bleeding from?
As Victor confessed that his friend was bleeding from his stomach, unsure of his breathing status. Questions flew in rapid succession, the dispatcher desperately seeking answers.
Okay, who's downstairs?
Who
Look
was
down.
With the victim? Where was the
so
assailant?
Your folks was upstairs and your friend was downstairs.
Yep.
Victor's responses offered a semblance of order amidst the chaos.
I didn't hear the door open until after the scream, and then we ran down the stairs and we have an alarm.
The victim's partner, Joe Price, remained by his side on the second floor while Victor rushed upstairs to make the crucial call for help. Instructions were issued with intense determination. The dispatcher's voice etching each word into Victor's mind. The urgency was palpable as she outlined the life-saving measures to be taken. Retrieve a towel, apply pressure to the wound, layer more towels when necessary, do not remove the initial one. In the background, Victor's frantic voice guided someone to apply pressure, an ominous reminder of the battle being waged for a life. Yet, as the minutes passed and paramedics rushed to the scene, an eerie sense of foreboding took hold. The hair-raising call had set the stage for a night unlike any other. The 911 operator had braced Victor for the arrival of medical professionals.
We have help on route now, okay?
Unaware of the disturbing truth that awaited them. With every passing second, the weight of the situation grew heavier. At 11:54 p.m., the paramedics arrived, greeted by the sight of Victor on the porch, clad in a white terry cloth bathrobe.
Someone was stabbed. They're on our second floor.
He appeared freshly showered. Still connected to the 911 operator, he pleaded for their aid. His face, a canvas of pain and sorrow, was marred by tears which cascaded uncontrollably, carving rivulets of anguish upon his cheeks. The paramedics, seasoned with a combined 25 years on the job, and well-versed in the most horrible of situations, were taken aback as they ventured into the house. In most cases of violence, chaos reigns supreme. In a situation like this one, typically a cacophony of screams and directions would lead the paramedics to the wounded party. But within these walls, an eerie calmness prevailed, save for Victor's anguished sobs. Ascending the stairs, the paramedics encountered Dylan Ward, emerging from a bathroom, dressed in a white terry cloth robe, and he displayed an air of detachment. Freshly showered and donning a robe, his demeanor offered no insight into the unfolding tragedy. Oblivious to the paramedics' inquiries, he retreated into a bedroom, shutting the door behind him. The tension mounted as they proceeded along the corridor, finally reaching the guest room. The scene that unfolded before them was chilling. A lifeless body lay on a perfectly made pull-out sofa bed. Robert Wan, age 32, had succumbed to a nightmarish fate. No one tended to his wounds. No one clutched a towel in an attempt to stave off the inevitable. This was a bit strange, since we clearly heard the men, allegedly following the 911 dispatcher's directions from over the phone. Seated on the bed, facing away from the door, Joseph Price, the owner of the house, sat on the edge of the bed in his underwear and appearing freshly showered. The paramedics again asked what was going on, and Joe Price simply replied without turning around that he had heard a scream. Unease consumed the room as the paramedics assessed the situation. Joe Price's eerie demeanor raised suspicions with the paramedics, so much so that the two men made Joe show them his hands, so they could be sure he was not harboring a weapon. The paramedics then positioned themselves in such a way that they could both keep an eye on Joe while they were working on Robert. Robert's lifeless form lay with a pillow, cradling his head. A mouth guard he wore nightly, still tucked between the man's teeth. Three stab wounds punctured his torso. His gray William and Mary t-shirt offering little protection from the brutality of the attack. The paramedics recoiled at the sight of the heart wound, a gaping void, wide enough to admit an entire probing finger. A knife, adorned with a faint smattering of blood, rested ominously on the bedside table, its presence suggesting a weapon turned lethal. Robert had long since succumbed to the cold embrace of death. His pulse faded from existence. An EKG confirmed the somber truth, a flat line, marking the absence of life within his once vibrant heart. With heavy hearts, the paramedics embarked on a final journey, carrying Robert Wan's lifeless body to the hospital, where the unyielding hands of time recorded his passing at precisely 12:25 a.m. At precisely 12:06 a.m., Kathy's world suddenly crumbled with one shocking phone call from Joe Price. His voice filled with disbelief and anguish, he uttered the unthinkable words, "Kathy, I can't believe I'm calling you about this. Go to George Washington Hospital. Robert has been stabbed in the back." Fueled by panic and concern, Kathy wasted no time in reaching out to her in-laws, who had recently relocated from Brooklyn, New York, to be closer to the family. Coincidentally, Robert's younger brother was also visiting at the time. Together, they embarked on a desperate journey to George Washington Hospital, bracing themselves for the sight of Robert in critical condition. However, upon their arrival, their worst fears were realized as they were met with the devastating truth. Robert had already succumbed to his injuries, leaving them shattered and consumed by grief. In the wake of that fateful night, unanswered questions and a labyrinth of unsettling clues would plunge investigators into a bewildering abyss of uncertainty. The enigmatic circumstances surrounding Robert Wan's demise had set the stage for a haunting murder investigation, one that would unravel with chilling intensity, challenging the very fabric of Truth and Justice. Once at the hospital, a revelation struck Kathy with a mix of disbelief and mounting unease. Robert had been stabbed in the chest and stomach, contradicting Joe Price's initial claim of a backstabbing. It seemed like a trivial detail at first, but little did she know that this inconsistency would be the first stitch unraveling the fabric of a perplexing and frustrating murder investigation. The sequence of events unfolded with chilling mystery. Robert Wan had entered the residence shared by Joseph Price, Victor Siborski, and Dylan Ward at 10:30 p.m., and less than 2 hours later, as August 2nd turned into August 3rd, he had taken his last breath. The enigma of what had transpired loomed heavy, demanding answers. The crime scene presented an otherworldly tableau, defying comprehension. As the police arrived, preceding the departure of the paramedics with Robert's lifeless body, they encountered a jarringly organized guest room. No signs of a struggle, no disarray. The meticulous arrangement of Robert's folded work clothes, untouched personal belongings, and undisturbed surroundings belied any hint of a robbery. Puzzlingly, the absence of any struggle became even more pronounced. A solitary indention on the pillow marked where Robert's head had rested, as though he had remained motionless throughout the entire assault. Curiously, apart from a faint blood smear, seemingly deliberate in its nature, on his abdomen, Robert's body bore scant traces of blood. Such minimal bloodshed was bizarre with the severity of his 2 stomach stabs and 1 chest wound, further deepening the mystery surrounding the circumstances of Robert's tragic death. Adding to the unsettling scene, the bed itself bore only 2 minuscule bloodstains beneath Robert's lifeless form, almost devoid of any trace of blood. The bed sheets were meticulously folded at a precise 45-degree angle, akin to the meticulousness of a luxury 5-star hotel. They exhibited an uncanny pristine quality. It was as if Robert had been cleansed, dressed anew, and reverently placed in the bed, evoking an unnerving sense of staging. The police, in their meticulous examination, confirmed that the knife discovered on the bedside table originated from the kitchen knife block. However, they had their doubts that it had served as the actual murder weapon. The blade surpassed the length of the entry wounds on Robert's chest, rendering it unsuitable for the use in this crime. Furthermore, the cutting edge remained devoid of any telltale blood, and there were no traces of cotton fibers from Robert's t-shirt present on the knife. Intriguingly, a professional cutlery set found in Dylan Ward's bedroom provided a potential lead. Notably absent from this set of knives was a 4.5-inch knife, a dimension that actually aligned with the depth of Robert's inflicted wounds. Regrettably, to this day, this missing knife has never been found. Upon scrutinizing the scene, the detectives noticed a white cotton towel on the floor adjacent to the bed, marked by 3 bloodstains. According to the trio's account, this towel had been employed to staunch the bleeding from Robert's wounds. However, the stains defied expectations, measuring a mere 2.5 by 3 inches. Such low presence of blood scarcely aligned with what one would anticipate from a towel utilized to stop the profuse bleeding of a knife wound. Instead, the patterns resembled those left by wiping a blade clean of blood, further adding to the dissonance enveloping the scene. Every piece of forensic evidence clashed with the narrative provided by the three men, amplifying the sense of wrongness that permeated the entire investigation. The discrepancies became increasingly evident, leaving the investigators to grapple with the disconcerting notion that the truth lay veiled beneath layers of deceit and confusion. Taken to the police station for questioning, all three men underwent separate interviews. Despite this, all three of the men's accounts remained strikingly consistent. Tune in next Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts, as we return with Who Killed Robert Wan? Part 2, Unknown Intruder. Can the shadows be banished, revealing the face of a cold-blooded killer? Find out as the secrets of Robert Wan's murder unravel before your very ears. We dance round in a ring and suppose, but the secret sits in the middle and knows.
Today's episode of The Secret Sits was researched and written by the host, John Dodson. All episodes are engineered and mixed by me, Gabriel Dodson. Check the show notes for links to all of our social media. Email us at thesecretsitspodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts.